All right, everyone, welcome to this podcast. This podcast does not have a name, but all you need to know that is myself, Jake Welch, go by the moniker of at BYU All Blue, and my friend, Zach Bloxham, the person who probably looks the most like Cliff Kingsbury in all of Twitter. And we are here hosting this podcast. We don't know exactly what it is or what's going to become of it, but we want to talk BYU sports because that's what we love, and we're going to see what comes of it. So, Zach, how are you doing?
Dude, I am doing so well. This is a podcast that has been birthed with no name.
It's the only way to go. I feel like in Boulder, Colorado, where I once lived, millions of children were born without names until nature gave them a name. So I feel like this is the best way for us to present this podcast to the world. So
we're following your tutelage, my friend.
Sounds good. Well, I think the happiness, the direct correlation of our happiness, is due to the fact that BYU football is a mere hours away, and there's nothing that gets me more excited than the idea of a new season, a fresh start, a new beginning. And of course, last year there was a very rude awakening after that football game. I think we played on the East Coast. I'm having a hard time remembering the exact details. I think I blocked it out of my memory successfully. I hope you have too.
Yeah, selective amnesia has set in.
That's a beautiful thing. So we will not speak of that certain Charlottesville game, thunderstorm, what have you. But it's an exciting time to be a BYU fan, any football fan for that matter, unless you're, I don't know, Indiana. Any specific reasons why you, Zach, are excited for this upcoming football season?
I think we, as BYU fans, were a little... I think we knew what we were getting with an eye, but we didn't know what we were getting with an eye. It was Robert and I back, same face, same leather jacket, same horrifying personality on the sideline, but with a brand new offense. And so it was interesting to see how the players and how the system would work. And I remember during that first game against that team, which we played in Charlottesville, I don't remember who it was, but I remember being surprised at how fast the pace of the game was. That go fast and go hard actually lived up and exceeded my expectations for how fast it was going to be. And I think that was kind of setting the foundation for, I think, where BYU's offense was in year one with Taysom Hill first full year as a starter and not really having any wide receivers who could get open in a one-to-one situation against good corners. Nothing taken away from Cody Hoffman, but he's not going to burn anyone over the top. And he's not going to be a guy. You look at the games against Washington and Wisconsin. Those weren't games where Cody Hoffman really played in a way that would help BYU win games. So,
That came true today. I mean, the fact that he was cut today from the Washington Redskins plays up to the fact where it's like BYU's wide receivers, of all of them, he was the most dominant. And the fact that like he's not able to even to sniff an NFL roster right now speaks volumes to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where he may have been drafted by what people saw on the stat sheet as opposed to what people actually saw on film, because I think Cody Hoffman has an amazing college career, and that he even had a chance to go to the NFL considering his physical limitations is quite amazing, and it really a service to him and his hard work. But considering BYU's struggles at the wide receiver position and their consistent struggles at the offensive line, Taysom Hill's inability to hit anything really the first part of the season and still struggling with his accuracy as the season went on, really to be able to have the kind of offensive numbers that BYU had last season between the 20s, I guess, was a testament, I think, to Robert and I's offensive capabilities. And I think in year two with an obviously upgraded wide receiver core and bringing back Hill and Williams, and then having the offensive line reverbed and given new life by some new commits, it can only be better than it was last season. And I think that with how the defense has always been consistent since Bronco's been there, that is a sign of good things to come.
Absolutely. And you look at, I mean, the coaching tree that Robert and I comes from, he's a direct descendant of Coach Leach. And we know that in his very first season with Washington State, not highly successful. I mean, there were moments of brilliance, but there were moments of frustration. We saw in that very first game when BYU played against Washington State a couple of years back, there's obvious frustrations. There's a lot of growing pains in that offense that they were experiencing. Last year, they had significant improvement, and now they're going to be one of the better, you know, offenses in the Pac-12. And this, I mean, people are predicting that they're going to score 40, 45 points a game. So I think that, I mean, in year two, we're going to see, you know, more consistent growth out of this team. But the key things that we kind of already touched on, the consistency, the ability to eliminate these drives of like 37 seconds where you go three and out and you know, you're running a play every 9 seconds, and then having a successful red zone offense. Do you think that with, I mean, if it's the offensive lineman changes or the wide receivers, do you think that BYU's offense will be able to solve at least two, if not all three, of those issues?
I do. I think that the speed on the outside is really what the key to these to increasing the red zone rate and increasing the third down conversion rate and to find consistency on these drives. Because, you know, when BYU would get into inside the 20, they didn't have anyone that could spread the field side to side. And so when you have guys like Justin Blackmon, and when you have, or not Justin Blackmon, I should say, Shanti Blackmon, and yes, when you have guys like Trey Dye, who can actually spread the field going side to side horizontally, not just vertically, but horizontally, that keeps the defense much more on point. And they're going to have to be able to defend the whole field, and they're not just going to be able to bunch up and know that BYU can't beat them with speed on the outside. And BYU hasn't ever really had a guy with that kind of capability, maybe since Austin Colley. And we saw what BYU's offense did in the red zone during those years when they had the ability to go over the top and the ability to go in from horizontally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be curious to see what the level of talent is. And it's funny because I think in spring and in fall camp, everyone is all world. And I think I mentioned this in a few tweets recently that, I mean, we've seen that Ross Oppo in fall camp is just like otherworldly. You know, he's an amazing wide receiver. But then he gets into the season and we just don't know how proven he is. Now, with a guy like Jordan Leslie, who's transferring from UTEP, there's some, you know, we're able to see that he had success at the Division I level, maybe not against the greatest of competition, but also he didn't have the greatest talent around him. Guys like a Shawnee Blackmon and Nick Kurtz, hopefully he gets back and can see the field as soon as possible. We're not exactly sure what we're getting with some of these guys who are transferring in, so hopefully they can buck the trend of, you know, being all world in camp and then, you know, kind of completely disappearing when it comes to, you know, showing up, you know, in the actual games. But I'm really excited to see how those guys turn up. Real quickly, offensive line. I'm optimistic about this. And I think that even just the slightest bit improvement in the offensive line is going to help this offense so much. I was watching clips of a certain game. I believe it was against Boise State. We won that game handily. And even against Utah State as well. Both of those games, our offense was dominating. We were playing really well. But it seemed like every single play, Taysom Hill was running for his life. Like, there were at least two or three times, and having played offensive line, I've thrown many of these blocks. They're called a lookout block, which basically means you just turn and yell to the quarterback, look out, because this guy's coming straight towards you. And there's nothing that you did to even remotely protect him. And so I'm really hoping, and it seems like the aggressive nature, I mean, Garrett 2J kind of talks about this, you know, with the media throughout fall camp, that these guys are going to be much more aggressive. And I'm just optimistic that even just the slightest bit of improvement will help this offense so much more.
Oh, absolutely. I think that they've infused some new talent. You know, Tejan Koriyama, the most noticeable change to the offensive line, you know, starting center, who's a true freshman. Those kinds of things don't happen at the offensive line position because usually they have to get their body accustomed to playing college football. So if someone comes in as a freshman and can have that kind of nastiness and that kind of passion for the game, he's only going to get better. And hopefully, you know, when a freshman like Koriyama can bring that kind of energy and that kind of intensity to the field as a newbie, that hopefully that will rub off on the rest of the group. And I think Garrett Duje has done a good job there because I think they did improve as the year went on. They did struggle in being able to open up running holes and running lanes against teams like Wisconsin and Washington. But that's because, you know, those teams may have been better in between the trenches than BYU was. So it's understandable that they would struggle in those situations, but they need to take the next step forward where we need to be able to go toe-to-toe in the trenches with teams who may be more athletically talented than us all around the field. We can't lose the battle in the trenches because if BYU, with its limited athletic ability, even with the increased level of talent, if BYU loses in the trenches, they have no shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as much as we can talk about these new skill players that we're adding, most of these programs, most of these, you know, Power 5 conference programs that we're playing against, they have just as much speed and just as much athleticism on the outside to match us. So imperative that we have that the big guys up front, the big uglies just really fighting for us. Switch over to the defensive side of the ball. The last 2 years we've been blessed with, I mean, I guess even 4 years, I mean, with Kyle Van Noy, but specifically with Kyle Van Noy and Ziggy Ansah, of having explosive playmakers on the outside, rushing the quarterback, getting sacks. And there even, I had some concerns last year, even just like thinking about this coming year of like, okay, so when Kyle leaves, who is going to be our explosive playmaker? Like, we have good, you know, defensive backs. We got, you know, good, consistent guys on our linebacking corps that I think are going to be very serviceable. But we don't have a guy that is going to, you know, break off the edge, shed two, you know, linemen and be able to sack the quarterback. Is there anyone out of this defense that you see maybe that can surprise me and that can prove me wrong and that can be this playmaker?
Well, I think Lonnie Fua showed flashes of that in the past few seasons, a little bit overshadowed by Van Noy, but I know Bronco's spoken very highly of him as maybe filling the shoes of Van Noy on the outside. And, you know, Van Noy obviously has moved on to play in the NFL with the Detroit Lions, but Kyle Van Noy season could have been much, much better last year had he finished plays. I can't remember how many times he would, you know, just go around a block or really see a play before it's happening and get there, be able to make the tackle and miss the tackle. And he can't do it all himself, but it will be nice if he could have finished some of those, because I think BYU would have had even more success on the defensive end if he could have finished plays. And I'm really interested to see Bronson Kafusi standing up. Not that is just the visual, the Iron Giant, the film The Iron Giant comes to mind. Just this giant human being, 6'7", 265 pounds, the mayor of Spokane, Washington, Bronson Kafusi. having him stand up and having the ability to be as athletic as he is at the size that he is, I just want to see that happen in front of him. I want to see that in the flesh. That's just something that I'm looking forward to, because he brings such a different mentality than someone like Kyle Van Noy, who wasn't all that tall, but was sure quick and sure athletic. Bronson Kafusi is a ginormous human being.
He is, and Kelly Olynyk can testify to that in a courtroom in front of millions of people. But
And we want to say the statute of limitations on that assault has not yet passed, so Bronson probably needs to keep counsel close. even though Kelly Olynyk's making some good money with the Boston Celtics, I don't think he or the citizens of that sleepy Eastern Washington town have forgot about his endeavors.
Counterpoint to that, to maybe this love fest that we're giving Bronson Kafusi, and maybe this is me just being cautiously optimistic, but the last time I remember us having a massive linebacker, and this probably makes no sense because Justin Enna, if you remember correctly, he was a massive inside linebacker for BYU, but he was huge. You know, I don't know his height, but he was probably like 250-something odd pounds. And I remember, you know, all of the BYU fans and the community were so excited about him because he was a massive linebacker. And I remember a very specific game against one Colorado State and the greatest quarterback ever to play out of Fort Collins by the name of the Bradley Van Pelt ran circles around this guy. And he, I think, even ran over Justin Enna one time going into the end zone for his like seventh consecutive touchdown in one game that happened in Provo.
The skateboarding terror himself.
Yeah. I mean, that he is a legend to this day in Northern Colorado. But I'm only slightly, and this is where I'm, you know, being very cautious when thinking about Bron Scafuzzi, like setting the edge on the outside. He's athletic. He is gifted. But I just wonder how much, you know, being able to drop back into coverage. Yeah, he's tall. He can cover a lot of surface area. I'm just interested to see in those moments where he has to cover, you know, a running back coming out of the backfield, going off into the flat. If he's going to be able to make those plays.
Yeah.
I think that he will be. I'm optimistic that he will be. But I'm just concerned. I just have visions of massive linebackers getting, you know, run around in circles by.
Yeah. No, and another one that comes to mind was Vic Soto, because he switched from defensive end to linebacker, it seemed like, a numerous times during his time in Provo.
Yep.
And I don't know if he ever really felt comfortable in one position or another. So, you know, with Kafusi learning a new position, and who knows if that kid's even stopped growing. I mean, he still looks to me like he's 19 years old in a man's body, obviously. He reminds me, you know, of LeBron James, who is just, when he came into the NBA, he looked like a man, but his face was as if he has a boy face.
Yeah.
And that's what it is with Kafusi. So I don't know if he stopped growing or whatever, but it's a new position, and I don't doubt his football acumen, but when he's played his whole life at one position, it'll be interesting to see just how that correlates, and it's going to be up to the coaching staff to make sure that, you know, he's drilled in the proper way.
Just know that whenever we tweet out this podcast or link to this podcast, the only thing that I'm going to say is, listen to the podcast where Zach Bloxham compares LeBron James to Bronson Kafusi, and it's going to be relevant, and you're going to want to listen to it, and that's the only thing that people are going to want to listen for is your expert analysis. And
they're we already have our Bradley Van Pelt reference done, so we'll have that for next time as well.
Yes, absolutely. Bradley Van Pelt reference in every single podcast that we do. I am 100% behind that.
The patron saint of Fort Collins.
Yep, a beloved character indeed. Kind of talking about this week's game against UConn. I don't think a lot of us are well versed about UConn, because any football that is played in the Northeast part of the United States is completely irrelevant. I say that coming from New Jersey. Rutgers, I always pray, will be some kind of a relevant football team. Syracuse was a great football school at one point in time. Connecticut, I mean, they have gone to a Fiesta Bowl many years ago with Randy Edsall. I don't know a whole lot about them, but we do know these things. That BYU playing on the road in the opening game, you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I feel like anytime you throw into these, you know, various factors into play, I think someone on Twitter, I believe, said that there's a 50% chance of rain in Hartford the day that BYU is playing there, and I was like, that is the most depressing thing I think I've heard all week. But looking ahead to this game, is there anything that we can expect, knowing that first game is kind of a crapshoot?
Well, I agree with what you said about Northeastern football being totally irrelevant. UConn reminds me of Cuba Gooding Jr. You know, he won an Oscar, and then he has been in a bunch of terrible movies ever since. And that reminds me of UConn. I mean, that is their one thing that they've been to the Fiesta Bowl. But when you think of UConn, you think of their women's basketball team before you think of their football team. And that kind of goes to the aura of the Husky football program. But
and just because you said that, we are now going to struggle mightily with this school that is only associated with women's basketball.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we have mentioned, not by name, but by implication, the game against Virginia, where BYU lost probably a game. I would say, I was talking to my dad today, and I still consider that to be probably the worst loss in Broncos' career, just for all the reasons that we all know about. And so I would be really surprised if BYU came out flat against UConn. But considering the number of you know, key offensive players who aren't going to be playing, Jamal Williams, Devon Blackman, Nick Kurtz, BYU needs... It just seems like this is a game where BYU had all of their key cogs that they could just run away with it. It would be one of those games where BYU could just get ready and get prepped for Texas. But with those guys out, with this game being played on the East Coast, with BYU struggling usually in the first part of the season on the road against, you know, quality, I wouldn't say quality opponent is in UConn, but opponents that aren't terrible. Yeah, it's one of those games where you look at the spread and you see 16.5 points and you're like, that's too many points for me on an opening game with BYU's history and with all the players they're missing. And I know UConn's terrible. That because UConn's terrible, I'm not sure.
Yeah, now it's there's so many just wild cards, and like you mentioned, you know, all these guys being out, you just don't know what to expect. And I'm just assuming that we're gonna see a lot of zone read from Taysom Hill and from Algie Brown. I mean, I'm fine with Algie Brown just running it 40 times up the middle because I think that he can be a fantastic running back, and he's gonna be able to finish, just like physically punish people. And but I mean, worst comes to worst, just get out of there with a victory. I think after what all BYU fandom experienced last year, it's like, we don't have to put up so many points. We don't have to show the world our offense. We don't have to put on this great, amazing display on ESPN. I am completely fine with us walking out of a last-second field goal victory, what have you, as long as we get a W. I don't know if you have the same sentiment.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no such thing as an ugly win, and I'm convinced of that. No one cares how it happened as long as you get the win, and especially considering that we have Texas coming up the week after. This is just a game to get through this, to get out of Hartford, as everyone who's ever been there wants to do very quickly. Just get out and get back to Provo and start prepping for a game, I think, that's going to be really, really difficult down in Austin. So this is just a win and go get out of town contest coming up on Friday.
Yep, absolutely. And we'll have plenty to say about the rest of the matchups, coming up here. We'll go ahead and wrap up the podcast with these very specific questions. These are the most important ones that we could be asking here on this podcast this evening. Now, as most of us know, during fall camp, it's tradition to break out of the norm, they'll not practice. Usually they'll go bowling, golfing, what have you. Now, we know that Bronco Mendenhall went and took his team to go see the movie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was directed by Michael Bay. And we all know how those movies turn out. I have not seen it. I don't think you have either. I'm assuming that you haven't. I hope that you haven't. But on a
I have not.
Good. Thank you for confirming that. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerning is that, A, that they bought tickets to this movie, and B, the fact that many of them enjoyed it, that many of the football players and coaches, I think Bronco even said that he enjoyed it. How concerning is this?
I think it's the most concerning thing about BYU's football program since tradition, spirit, and honor.
So almost on the year mark of the fact, we thought that it couldn't get any worse, but it did.
Well, as long as Bronco doesn't mess with the jerseys, putting Raphael or Michelangelo on the back of the jerseys, I think we'll be okay. But that's the choice. And I consider myself to be a complete and utter movie elitist. So my opinion on these films would probably not be the most, it wouldn't be the best for the masses. But that being said, I'm glad that the team enjoyed it. If that's what they need to do to find entertainment, then God bless them.
Absolutely. So being the movie elitist that you are, what movie would you want to show to this BYU football team before they go into battle on Friday? It can be any movie from the history of time. It could be, one that's in recently in theaters. We could put them to sleep probably by showing them Boyhood, because I'm sure they would, not get the amazing quality of film that is. But what film would you want to show to this BYU football team?
It's easy to just say something like Pulp Fiction, because I want them to have the kind of, the kind of murderous. But then again, I know Bronco would never sign off on something.
R rating. In this hypothetical situation, you are the coach. You make the call, and we'll just throw it out there that no general authority will be on this trip with the football team. So you can.
How about this? We could do a clean flicks version of The Departed, which would probably last about 15 minutes. and they would be amped and ready to go for Friday.
Absolutely. And as long as there's, we just get like an animated GIF of Jack Nicholson just pouring his face into a mountain of cocaine. Yeah. I think it just like have that on repeat for the players to watch. Like, this is what you're going to do to the UConn Huskies.
Exactly.
You completely and wholly ingest them and then completely dominate out there. So I'm glad. I think that's a very important, you know, topic of conversation. I think it needed to happen. I'm glad that it did. That'll wrap up our podcast. Thank you for all those who have stayed through the entirety of this podcast to listen to what we have to say here. Hopefully you don't think that we're so much more entertaining on Twitter and we should just stick to that. Hopefully you will come back for another version of this unnamed, we'll call it the Bradley Van Pelt Memorial Podcast for now. And we'll be coming at you, you know, a regular basis here throughout the season. So thank you for joining us and have a good evening.